Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. David Swanson of Impeach PAC joins us this time. Swanson is one of the busiest progressive Democrats in Washington right now as the midterm elections approach, and he will be offering us a primer on what we can do as voters to protect our ballots and foster democracy in our home states. David Swanson is a member of several organizations working to put progressive Democrats in office, and we will be getting his impression of where things stand in the 2006 race. A former newspaper reporter and press secretary for Denis Kucinich's 2004 presidential campaign, David Swanson is on the board of Progressive Democrats of America and co-founder of After Downing Street Coalition. David Swanson, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Hi, Dori. Thanks for having me.
The elections are getting close. Let me just ask you to take the pulse of some of the states where you're working so hard to compensate for the press and call attention to the issues and try to educate voters about more progressive candidates that are out there.
The media in this country often do a horrendous job of reporting on elections, particularly prior to elections. But the one thing that they sometimes do in a useful way is polling. And the Washington Post has a story today on a poll they've just done in which independents now favor Democrats to Republicans by a margin of 2-1. And overwhelmingly, the issue that is driving them is the Iraq War and opposition to that war. Democrats are loyal to Democrats almost entirely, 95%. Republicans are loyal to Republicans, 88%. But that's not counting the significant number of people who have ceased calling themselves Republicans under this administration. And what we're seeing now is what many of us have expected to see for many months. That is, the elections are about Iraq, and the best position is a strong opposition to the war. The independents that are moving to Democrats are doing so more out of opposition to Republicans and the president than passion for the Democrats and their positions. And, of course, the issue that I work on primarily, that is trying to move a case for impeachment of the president and vice president, is an issue that many Democrats and the Democratic Party leadership are avoiding, but which every poll and every analysis suggest would be one of the best issues to drive opposition to Republican incumbents. And we, in fact, in recent weeks have been finding many more Democratic challengers, not incumbents, but challengers, running on a platform of impeachment. And our PAC, ImpeachPAC.org, has endorsed a dozen Democratic congressional challengers, many of whom are likely to win now, who support immediate impeachment hearings against Bush and Cheney, and they will tell you that nothing excites voters more than talk of that sort of accountability and restoration of the rule of law, which is something that actually appeals to libertarians and right-wing voters as well.
Talk about the importance of Tony Tripiano's highly successful campaign in Michigan's 11th voting district.
Tony Tripiano is well known around the country as a radio host and a progressive radio talk show host, one of the earlier ones to develop a large audience. And he has been doing something that he tells me is much more difficult than hosting radio shows, and that is running for Congress in Michigan's 11th against Republican Bush-following Congressman McCotter. And he's been doing a tremendous job of it against the odds, and the gap in the polls has been narrowing and narrowing down to a few percentage points last time I looked, and he's been running a progressive campaign. He's for ending the war. He's for providing health care and education. He's for accountability and impeachment, and he was the very first candidate that Impeach PAC, our political action committee at ImpeachPAC.org, backed and sent a check for $5,000 and encouraged people to send more and get his campaign going. He's running in a district that has lost a tremendous number of jobs, and he's running on economic issues and opposition to corporate trade policies that have hurt people tremendously in Michigan. But he will also tell you that accountability and impeachment are what excite a lot of voters. So we are thrilled to have someone with the courage to go against the advice of all the cautious strategists and be willing to say, yes, I am for ending the war. I am for impeaching the criminals who launched it. To have Tony in Congress will be hugely advantageous to all of us.
If we're talking about 2-1 independents voting for Democrats this time around and saying so in this recent poll in the Washington Post, that means that any number of people can turn out for this election. We might have a huge number of voters turning out for one thing. And if that's the case, that favors Democrats. So let's talk about the numbers a little bit and what they mean.
Turnout will be decisive, which is another reason why Democratic candidates need to not just be the other candidate who's not the Republican, but need to have an aggressive campaign and need to push issues that will excite their base, not just fail to turn off the moderates. And so we are seeing candidates who are really pushing their opposition to this war as the number one issue doing surprisingly well. And we're seeing a number of races become competitive that no one thought the Democrats ever had a chance of winning, including my own district here in Virginia, including a district in Pennsylvania just north of Philadelphia that the New York Times wrote about. There are candidates who have ignored all the cautious advice and said, I am going to oppose this war and demand that it immediately end, and they're doing incredibly well because people are looking for a party that stands for something, that doesn't look timid. And you look at these polls, the Posts and others, and you see on the issue of terrorism, on the issue of war, on all of these issues, the public overwhelmingly trusts Democrats more than Republicans. And this goes against everything that the evening news tells you over and over again about Republicans being tough and the Democrats being weak and so forth. The public has seen through that. We're winning the public debate. The question now is one of turnout and of fighting stolen elections. There's no reason to think that these elections will not be any less of a disaster than the past few have been. And we are seeing the suppression techniques already. We're seeing the computer glitches already. We've set up a website at mydem.com for people to learn how they can be poll watchers and help fight stolen elections. That's what it's going to come down to. I mean, we now have 40% of us voting on electronic machines where there's no verifiable paper trail whatsoever, where the machines are incredibly susceptible to hacking. And we have another 40% voting on paper, but then those paper ballots are scanned by machines where the same problems arise, although fortunately you do have a verifiable paper trail. So we're talking about 80% of voters voting on electronic machines. And this was supposed to be the solution. This was supposed to help us. We put our faith in technology. The problem is that we open up more and easier routes for fraud. And we've done very little about the techniques of suppression and forcing people to vote in the right line, in the right district, or on provisional ballots that get tossed. And we are seeing those kinds of problems already. We're seeing strict voter ID laws. We're seeing people sent letters informing them that if they are an immigrant, they can't vote, legal citizen, immigrant, or otherwise. We are seeing people told they aren't registered. In fact, if you go to mydem.com, you can look up and make sure that you are still registered, that you haven't been dropped off for one reason or another, that you didn't have your maiden name on your driver's license and it conflicted and they dropped you off. You know, in the state of Maryland, we have a story in the past week of one of the candidates being mailed computer disks with the code for the Diebold machines on there, which in the hands of someone with bad intentions is quite helpful in allowing them to flip the election. And in fact, we saw what looked like those problems during the primaries, during the Democratic primaries in Maryland. And we have those problems around the country. And here in Virginia, I have to vote on a Diebold machine and just cross my fingers and hope and pray that maybe my vote will be counted. I have no way of verifying it unless I vote absentee. And so the other thing we show people how to do at mydem.com is how you can vote absentee and give your ballot a better chance of actually being counted. But this is the problem, and we need to not just be organized and prepared and have the 800 numbers and the information for how to contact lawyers, how to report problems we see, but also make sure that our candidates are going to be willing to fight, that they understand that we will not see them as sore losers if they protest a stolen election, that we will see them as heroes, because it's very important, as we saw from 2004, that the candidate himself or herself fight a stolen election.
There is this learning curve that I think a lot of voting rights organizations have been through, and they've become quite sophisticated at monitoring and sophisticated at voter education. Do you think that's going to make a big difference?
Many, many people are informed, and it's actually surprising to see the polls where some two-thirds of Americans distrust these new voting systems, and that kind of education is a remarkable achievement given the failure of the so-called mainstream media to give the issue any importance, and the quick dismissal as conspiracy theories by the media of all the problems that occurred in Ohio and elsewhere in 2004. So people are remarkably aware, and there are teams of lawyers being set up. There are teams of poll watchers being set up. You can go to mydem.com and sign up to help. And there are organizations planning to do exit polling. There's relatively little exit polling done usually in so-called off-year elections, non-presidential year elections. But what exit polling will be done in state races is likely to be ignored by the so-called mainstream media on the grounds that last time around the exit pollers got it quote-unquote wrong. But there are at least a couple of coalitions that have raised significant amounts of money and plan to do exit polling and report those results. Exit polling is incredibly accurate. In some nations, it's relied on for the official results. And we, the United States government, has always relied on it to dismiss elections in other countries. It's not a prediction. This is people who have actually just voted telling you what they just did. And so it's incredibly accurate. And last time around, of course, the exit polls were drastically different from the official results. And so we saw our corporate media immediately declare the exit polls wrong. Wrong in ways that were actually statistically impossible, wrong in ways that defied basic laws of mathematics, but nonetheless wrong. So if we are going to have exit polls as a tool for measuring elections, it's up to us to do them.
Now, what media outlets would you recommend for election coverage? I know Pacifica News, we're a Pacifica Network affiliate at WHUS-FM. We're at 91.7 out of the University of Connecticut in Connecticut. That's where Talk Nation Radio is produced. So we'll be airing at least some of their content, and they're good at covering elections. And they'll be providing updates throughout the day. You can find out where your local Pacifica affiliate is on the dial by logging on to pacifica.org. Or listen to their coverage online as well at pacifica.org. But where are some of the other media outlets that you might recommend?
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I guess in something of a self-interested way, in that I'm likely to be on Pacifica on election night with Verna Avery Brown from WPFW, the Pacifica station in D.C., who will be covering the election. So I would love for people to be listening there. There are all kinds of progressive radio stations around the country that can be expected to do better than average coverage. And there's a new network that's just started up in Arizona. There's Air America, and there are small progressive stations all over the country. I think websites are likely to do at least as good a job as radio shows. And so I would encourage people to go to websites like Bradblog, bradblog.com, which is run by Brad Friedman, who is a leader in following election problems and election fraud. I would go to democrats.com, which is a website I work on, which will be reporting news up to the minute. And search the progressive news websites, as well as the corporate news websites, and listen to Pacifica, and I think you're going to be as informed as you can be. But at least as important, follow the local news in your local district and be prepared to fight stolen elections in your district and in your state, and to press your candidates to help fight the stealing of their own elections.
Now, during the primaries, we saw that in Ohio, paper ballots were put into the machines the wrong way. And here in Connecticut, we will be using new voting systems, optical scan voting machines. That opens the door for some problems. The electronic machines were in the pipeline when the state discovered that there was a contracting issue. But voters here will now be challenged to look carefully at ballots, note exactly how they're supposed to be marked and how they go into machines. And no doubt there will be a shortage of poll workers. So tell people how they can volunteer at the polls and just what that process is like.
There are a lot of websites set up with the information, and mydem.com is a good one that has links to all the others. And there are ways, if you're a lawyer, you can join in that capacity. If you're a citizen who's not a lawyer, you can sign up to be a poll watcher to report problems. There are toll-free numbers to call. You can be an observer. That does not necessarily put you in the role of being able to help people with troublesome paper ballots and machines, but it does allow you to observe certain kinds of injustices. And to begin, we will in many states see enormously long lines and an insufficient number of machines in districts that tend to be Democratic, and we will see an abundance of machines and short lines in districts that tend to be Republican. And this is a problem with having our elections run by partisan officials, as we do in many states. And from there, you will see people turned away who are not on the roll, who should be. You will see people forced to vote on provisional ballots, which are very disproportionately later tossed in the trash can, and all sorts of problems that you will be able to observe. There's another website called protectmyvote.org where you can learn all sorts of things to watch for and what you can do about them. But it's fundamental now that you not just get out and vote and bring as many people to vote as you can with you, but that you do everything you can to make sure your vote is counted. Sadly, that's the state of our democracy. But we are very far from the point where our best approach is to ignore elections. Our best approach at this point by far is to take part in the elections, but try to make sure the elections are honest. And if these elections are stolen, and if enough people are upset about it, and if that kickstarts the movement for justice and for impeachment and for accountability that we've long been needing in this country, that might be a very good thing.
Do you see evidence that the Bush administration is worried about congressional oversight and possibly even hearings about Abu Ghraib, about all these various scandals that have occurred in Iraq, including one involving Halliburton? And just the list is very long, isn't it?
Well, the Military Commissions Act, as it's called, that was signed by the president a week ago, the legalization of kidnapping and torture, among other things, retroactively legalizes, pardons the president, the vice president, all administration officials for war crimes committed over the past several years. So there is very strong evidence that they are worried and that they are forcing through Congress shortly before an election a bill to pardon them for their war crimes. Now, the media has done a horrendous job, of course, of reporting that. Not everyone knows that that was in that bill, that that's what was done. But they have pardoned their crime. You know, you don't just wait for President Ford to pardon you. You pardon yourself preemptively. And at the same time, you throw out habeas corpus, you know, a protection that's fundamental to the American and British systems of justice that we've had for the better part of a millennium. So they are worried. And it's a little disturbing the degree to which they seem, or at least maintain a front of not being worried about the elections. Every poll says that the Republicans are going to lose the House and quite possibly the Senate majority. Every poll, everyone agrees. And we are very close to the elections. And yet the President and Karl Rove will assure you with absolute certainty that the Republicans will maintain a majority. Maybe they know something we don't. They also have clearly manipulated the trial of Saddam Hussein so that 2 days before the election, they will announce that he's guilty and they're going to kill him. So that our televisions, the day before the election, will be telling us nothing but, we got the bad guy. I don't know to what extent Americans will fall for that. I think we are fed up enough with the war, and we're fed up with it because it was based on lies. And so whether Americans know the degree to which we were friends with Saddam Hussein and Rumsfeld went over and shook his hand and helped him with chemical weapons and so forth in the 1980s, I don't know. But Americans are incredibly fed up with this war, and I suspect that, you know, executing one dictator is not going to change the fact that Americans are upset about killing 3,000 Americans and 650,000 Iraqis for a war that has put our great-grandchildren into debt and made us less safe.
Well, we've seen a terrible month of murder, killing, death squads, and the death of U.S. forces in Iraq. So it's not likely that Americans are enthusiastic at all about this war. The president, in fact, has just said that he won't be using the slogan, stay the course, anymore. He's been advised not to. And as a backdrop to the election, we now see that President Maliki is under so much pressure that there's been even discussion that there's a coup in play. So it couldn't be worse, right?
Right. But what does he do when he's worried that there might be a coup to throw him out? Does he go to the Iraqi people and ask whether they support him? No, he runs to the White House and asks, are you going to engineer a coup and throw me out? This is the state of democracy in Iraq. You know, there is no way, if we actually wanted to create democracy under a foreign occupation, but we never wanted to. We've created a puppet government, and things are going from bad to worse. And this study that we finally have, one serious scientific study that shows that there have been 650,000 excess deaths. This is more people that have died during this occupation than would have under the awful conditions of the sanctions that prevailed before the war. This is showing things going from bad to worse. Most of those 650,000 deaths were not during shock and awe. They were in recent months. Things get progressively worse as you look at it. And clearly, Iraq will be in a horrible state when U.S. troops pull out. But the longer we wait, the more horrible it will be. And we are accomplishing nothing by being there. And the American public gets this. There's only a quarter of Americans who now say it's worth staying there and fighting. So I think the president is in a horrible situation. He's tempted to attack Iran before the election, but appears unlikely to do so, although quite likely to do so afterwards, which is incredibly frightening, and many people are unaware of it. But in terms of Iraq, the American public is opposed. And a lot of that opposition is not just the trickle of ongoing deaths every day and the drain on resources that is hard for people to understand that amount of money, but the fact that we were lied to, and people don't like being lied to about something that important.
David Swanson, thanks so much for joining us on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks for having me.
David Swanson of Progressive Democrats of America and ImpeachPAC.org. Other web pages mentioned in this program were PDAmerica.org, AfterDowningStreet.org, and ProtectMyVote.org. As Democratic senatorial candidate Ned Lamont spoke about U.S. policy in Iraq on October 24th in West Hartford, Connecticut, he reminded his audience of the Vietnam War several times.
40 years ago, Senator J. William Fulbright, a giant of the Senate and a steadfast opponent of the war in Vietnam, he spoke out about the arrogance of power. 40 years later, too many in Washington have adopted that arrogance as their own, equating their power with their own virtue, never questioning their own decisions, never tolerating dissent, never accepting their own fallibility. The Bush administration misled the nation in the war. They overruled intelligence with ideology. They papered the public record with propaganda. They tried to silence their critics with attacks on their patriotism. Cocky about their power and careless with American lives, they were wrong about everything. When they could have relied on accurate instead of cherry-picked intelligence, they chose not to. They were wrong. And instead, they sacrificed credibility at home and abroad. When they could have given the inspectors time to discover whether Saddam Hussein actually had weapons of mass destruction, they chose not to. And again, they were wrong. History will judge the invasion of Iraq as one of the greatest foreign policy disasters of all time. But the mistakes were not limited to the decision to invade. Unfortunately, that was just the start.
Veterans Guy Blazer and Tom Smith resonated with Lamont's Vietnam comparisons. They're hoping Lamont will pull off an upset.
He was comparing what Nixon said with what Lehman is now saying. Lehman is now, he's just before the war, he's changing his mass. So he has, all of a sudden, he's being critical of the war. No, just like Nixon was. But even after his criticism, I think that something like 9,000 other American soldiers were killed before the war finally stopped. And the way we're going now, the war has, it's like Bush and Lehman would like this war to go on forever.
We're addicted to war. We can't get a, Eisenhower warned us about it before he left office, about the military-industrial complex, and be careful because you're going to be making a lot of money off it, but making more tanks. But, you know, what the end result is a disintegration of the country's infrastructure, which is happening now with our own country. We can't, our education has slipped, our health care, we're 34th in the world. And what are we doing? Just spending billions of dollars to kill people 20 times over. It's ridiculous. It's sociopathic.
For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion.